Speaker Joe Shikarchi. Welcome back to the Publix Radio.
It's my pleasure to be here. I always enjoy coming on your show, and I look forward to a great session with you today.
Let's start with the hot topic of at the start of the year, COVID. The members of the Rhode Island House and Senate are holding their meetings right now in person at the State House. Is this flirting with trouble given the rapid spread of Omicron?
So last Thursday, to be exact, a week ago, we had the Department of Health in here, and we following the protocols, we're following the governor's guidelines, and we're reevaluating it. We'll reevaluate it again after session. Obviously, I want to do what's safe for the members. We're keeping our staff limited. We're banning guests from the House floor, and that we are less than 100 people on the House floor. We are requiring members to wear masks, and when we're not wearing a mask, we're following the governor's mandate to be 6 feet away from each other.
In the interest of full disclosure, my wife is a nurse who works for Lifespan, but you don't have to have a wife who is a nurse to recognize even many weeks ago that there was a growing amount of stress on the state's hospitals due to COVID and that staffing was becoming a problem. As we talk here today, there is still not a plan for deploying National Guard to help Rhode Island's hospitals. Do you believe that Governor Dan McKee has moved too slowly on this issue?
Well, I have a great amount of admiration. My father was a doctor for healthcare professionals. They do a tremendous job in dealing with the public, and especially now under these very stressed situations. So I am concerned. I hear my members are concerned. I'm hearing about it from the public, my constituents as well. We're all concerned with the state of the hospital. I had a personal episode or incident with a member of my immediate family in a hospital about a week ago. So I know the stress firsthand of what's going on there. I am concerned. I've been talking to the governor as late as yesterday about it. He's well aware of the situation. He expects to have action very shortly, he told me. I'm assuming that means the National Guard will be brought in to supplement the staff. But I will defer to him. He's the executive of branch of government, and they make those decisions and they implement those actions.
In the run-up to Thanksgiving, Governor McKee was downplaying the threat of COVID, but as the Boston Globe reported this week, the state's own internal report warned at that time that COVID was rapidly spreading throughout the state. What do you take away from that disparity between what the state was saying internally and what Governor McKee was saying publicly?
So I don't get reports from the Department of Health or the CDC, nor should I, by the way. That's an executive function, as I said earlier. So the governor makes his decision based on a bunch of evidence. So I would defer you to ask him that question. I don't know what drew him to make that conclusion, but I'm sure there was good reason for it. And I don't want to second guess anybody on one piece of evidence. He has said numerous times on his press conference he makes his decisions based on a body of evidence. So I think that question is really more defined to go to him for an answer. But I will tell you that, you know, all of us in the General Assembly, we're very well connected to our constituents in the community, and it's a concern. Omicron and COVID is a very serious concern, as well as the testing is, as well as the delay in testing. We need to ramp up our testing capabilities, and we need to cut down dramatically the time it takes from being tested to find out.
We are in an election year now that it's 2022. Do you believe that Governor McKee has compiled a record that merits his winning the vote for governor?
He has compiled a record, and that's not for me to judge as Speaker of the House. That is for the voters of Rhode Island to judge him, and I'm sure they will. There's five candidates running for the Democratic governor. I'm sure there'll be even more candidates. Probably a Republican will emerge at some point, maybe even an independent, and that process will play itself out, and that's the beauty of our system of democracy. The people will make that decision. Ultimately, everybody will be judged, myself included, on our performance by the voters, and this is an election year, and the voters will make these decisions, not politicians.
Let's shift gears to talk about state spending. The legislature and Governor McKee got together on a plan to approve 10% of the state's more than $1 billion in federal COVID aid. The House and the Senate passed that during the first day of session on Tuesday, and Governor McKee quickly signed that into law. But the bulk of that money still remains to be spent. The Rhode Island Foundation worked with the business-backed Rhode Island Public Expenditure Council and the liberal-leaning Economic Progress Institute to formulate recommendations. their conclusion was that most of the federal COVID aid should go for three areas: housing, behavioral health, and workforce development. Do you support those priorities for the for spending the balance of the state's federal COVID aid?
I certainly think that those areas are important areas and we will address them. I would point out, and I respect Neil Steinberg and the great work of the Rutland Foundation and their partners in that report, that that is one of over 40 proposals that we have received. We have received proposals from individuals, from organizations. The AFL-CIO has sent us a detailed report. All of those reports will be fully vetted. They're on our website, so you or any of the listeners are welcome to look at it, and they're welcome to comment. We'll go through the normal budget process as we do every year. People should remember that our budgets are $13, $14 billion a year. So this should be no different than adding this extra $1 billion on top of it. I will assure your listeners that we will spend every dime of it, but we'll do so in a very open, transparent, and fair way. And we'll look at it. We'll look at the areas of education as well. I think some of the colleges have also submitted plans as well. We're going to look at and listen to everybody. There's no one person or one entity or one group or one body of government has a monopoly on good ideas. We're going to hear from everybody, and as we do when we put our budget together, and this process will be no different. We'll be very open and transparent. It'll be debated in public, live, on TV, and we welcome input from everybody.
As I said, the legislature and Governor McKee have already approved the spending of about 10% of the more than $1 billion in federal COVID aid. The state has a couple of years to spend all this money. How much more of that money do you expect the state to spend in the current fiscal year, which ends at the end of June, or in the next fiscal year?
I don't expect to spend all of the money. I will certainly listen to my colleagues from the Finance Committee and the body in general, but I don't think it's prudent to spend it all in, you know, one shot at one time. As you pointed out so correctly, the federal government has given us three additional years, including last year and this year, to spend the money. I think it should be spread out over at least 2 years. We don't know. This is COVID rescue money. We don't know where COVID's going to be. I mean, if you asked me that last year, I didn't think we'd all be in masks and all separated from 6 feet, and I didn't think there'd be a different variant. So I think it's prudent and wise to spend most of it. The bulk of it should be spent this year, now, in the next 6 months. Absolutely. But I do think it's also prudent and wise to reserve some of that for next year. We don't know what's going to happen. Anybody can't predict this pandemic we're in and the effects and these different variants of it. And we need to be cognizant of it. And unfortunately, now you've seen a stalemate in the U.S. Congress and the ability for them to pass the Build Back Better plan or some version of it is now stymied. We were very fortunate to get the infrastructure bill through and passed. And we'll have to wait now. And hopefully the Congress understands that, because that last tranche, the Build Back Better, was a big social service program. That was a program, hopefully the government, the initiative, let's hope that they can get some version of that passed in the next 6 months.
We're talking here with Rhode Island House Speaker Joe Ciccarci. And Mr. Speaker, a short time ago, you talked about how the most recent state budget passed last year was a little bit more than $13 billion. The size of the state budget has almost doubled from 2011, when it was $7.7 billion. I'm sure you'll point out that a large part of this is federal money, but nonetheless, some people express alarm about the growth in the state budget. Is this rate of growth in the state budget sustainable?
I don't think it is sustainable, and I don't think it will grow that fast. As you point out, there's a tremendous amount of money that has been passed in the last 2 years due to COVID. For example, it's not necessarily a direct state expenditure, but although we have to account for it, when the federal government passed enhanced unemployment benefits, that money was not sent from the federal government to the individual Rhode Islanders who were unemployed. That money was sent to the state Department of Employment and Labor Training, and they in turn sent it to the individuals in Rhode Island. So obviously that accounts for a lot of the growth that you see over the last 2 years. Beyond that, yes, the state government has grown. We have people who have a great deal of need. We have significant social service needs in Rhode Island. We have wage increases. People, everything's going up. Inflation's going up. It's no different from the state. Our health costs are going up. So we need to keep up with competitively to get good, talented people in state government. So we have to meet those demands as we come forward, and we will. We'll continue to do so. But I would point out, in the last 2 years since I've been Speaker, we've passed two budgets in the last year I've been Speaker, and there's been no broad-based tax increase in the last 2 years. That's pretty significant.
Couple of questions for you on recreational marijuana. You said earlier this week you expect the emergence soon of draft legislation for the legalization of recreational marijuana. How will that legislation resolve the differences in the competing proposals from Governor McKee, who wants a lottery to choose the additional licenses, and the state Senate, which wants to create a new commission to oversee the process?
So I don't necessarily think the new legislation will resolve anything per se. I think the new legislation is a framework that will begin a robust process with public input from everybody. And I think the final product, like any other legislation, very little legislation, when it comes out, looks like exactly how it was when it came in. So we've narrowed the differences on a lot of issues with the Senate, but not all of them. And I think this point in the process, it's good in the next 30 to 45 days to release that framework, to begin public hearings on it. We need to hear from all stakeholders. There's a good percentage of Islanders who don't think we should legalize marijuana. I think the majority think we should. I think we need to hear from the cultivators, from the Pediatric Association, from law enforcement, from judiciary, from taxation. Marijuana, legalization of recreational use of marijuana touches a lot of areas of state government. The framework that hopefully we will release in the short order, as I said, 30 to 45 days, will address those issues regarding expungement, regarding taxation, regarding licensing, regarding control of it. So we're getting closer to a resolution on it. But a resolution is not the final product. A resolution of it is what we're going to hear and let the public weigh in on it. And once we hear that, then we'll pass the final product.
As you know, law enforcement does not have a way of scientifically assessing whether people are under the influence of marijuana. Are you concerned that if the state moves ahead with legalization, that there will be unintended consequences, possibly such as more car accidents or higher car insurance rates?
That's a very good question. And I will tell you that what's one of the areas we studied, and we're looking at how other states have adopted that and looked at it. So there are some late technology that haven't been universally accepted, but that can detect somebody who is driving impaired based on marijuana. And we're looking at those as well. In addition to that, you're correct. In Colorado, when they legalized marijuana, they saw a significant increase in very small fender bender accidents, which also led to an increase of insurance rates because there were more accidents happening. So that's certainly a factor we'll consider, but I think that that's something that should be open and discussed with the public at a hearing process, and I welcome the input from the Automobile Association, from the Insurance Association, as well as from law enforcement.
As we talk, this week marks the one-year anniversary of the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Do you believe that American democracy is in danger?
I believe American democracy was in danger because of that, and I'm concerned about that as we go forward. I believe in the democratic process, the small d, and I believe in the democracy that we have in this country.
That's all the time we have, so we need to leave it there. Thank you for joining us, Rhode Island House Speaker Joe Shikarchi, a Democrat from Warwick.
A proud Democrat from Warwick. Thank you very much, sir.
As usual, you can find a lot more on our website at thepublicsradio.org. Got an idea for a subject or a guest? Email us at news@ripr.org. I'm Ian Donis.